You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for the game?
Well, that's what Geno Smith will be asking as he gets ready for his first start in forever. Certainly his first start as a Seahawk, and for all of us, our first chance to see an offense without Russell Wilson in as long as most of us can remember. It has been since 2011 that anybody else has started a game for the Seahawks, but we will see it Sunday night in Pittsburgh. Mike Salk Show here, 710 ESPN Seattle. Maura's here, Justin's here, we're all hanging out with you, getting ready for a weekend. Kraken will be back in action this weekend. It was fun to watch them last night. It really was an epic sports night, honestly. And we've had a couple of those now this week already. Just adding another sport into the mix really just changes everything, right? You got watching Kraken last night, the NFL game last night, baseball game last night, great game five, winner take all,
playoff
rivalry.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you just put it all together. It was just a good night for passion, right? Passionate sports fandom. I really dug it. I was pretty into it last night. As for Sunday, I'm rooting for Geno. I really am. I'm rooting for Geno Smith. He seems like a good dude, right? I know that, like, his background is the fact that he got punched in the face in the locker room. Like, it's sort of hard to think of him without thinking about that moment. But his teammates and coaches here seem to really like him. And that tells us something, right? They seem to be really rooting for him. Pete Carroll certainly was when he talked about him this week.
He has been highly thought of by the organization, by his teammates. Obviously, the fans responded, too. You know, and we're grateful that he's been with us. And so now that it's his time and his chance to do this and help his club, you know, couldn't be more excited for him. And he's going to be really tuned in. He's really smart. Their scheme and system and all of that, really sharp in the huddle, at the line of scrimmage, all that kind of stuff he's really good at. So, yeah, he gives himself every chance to be, you know, have a good performance and help us win.
Pete being very optimistic, right? Pete's excited for what he could find. Bobby Wagner said all the right things.
The way Geno handles himself, the way Geno prepares, if you walk into a room or you walk into the building and you just fly on the wall, you wouldn't think that Geno is not a starter just by the way that he prepares. And so I think that's why it's so easy for us to rally behind him, because we know that he's done the work. We know that he's prepared. He's right there with Russell learning and doing all the things that he needs to do to be a great quarterback.
I like that phrase, rally behind him. That's something that they're going to need to do this week, because while he is prepared as a starter, there's a reason he hasn't been for however many years. So Bobby's saying the right things. His teammates seem to like him. Geno said all the right things this week.
It means everything, man. It means everything, but it's not about me. You know, it's about the team and, you know, going out there together, you know, all as one unit, the offense, the defense, special teams, coaching staff, front office, everybody. It's about the team. It's about doing what's best for the team. It's not about me at all. Obviously, you know, it's a great opportunity, but, you know, my mindset is focused on winning and doing what's best for the team.
So he knows what to do, right? It's not about me. It's about the team. That's a sign of a good leader and a guy who knows that he's got to step into a situation where everybody has to come together, right, in order for them to win. Shane Waldron, who I think probably needs to step up his game as much as anybody this week, he's gotten a chance now, and he had an opportunity to watch Geno in the last game, so hopefully that's something for him to build on.
I just think his command, you know, his command of the huddle, his command at the line of scrimmage, he was decisive, you know, going right through his reads, had the ability to use his legs at times if it wasn't right there. And so just the confidence that he exuded, the guys could feel it in the huddle, the guys could feel it on the sideline there. So it was great to see him get in there. And
again, it's easy to root for Geno Smith when he comes in and presents that confidence in the huddle that the guys all can rally behind. Those are all the things you're looking for in a backup. Don't come out there and look scared. Don't come out there and look nervous.
Talking about him like he's a little brother. He's been a professional quarterback since 2012?
That's right. And by the way, he's been here for a while now, too, and Waldron said that's an advantage.
You know, the small difference there is that I have had a chance to be around Geno at the same amount of time as Russell, so I feel like I have a good understanding of where he's at, of what he can bring to the table. And so, again, just trying to get that game plan ready to go and tailor it around his skill set, which, like I said, he's done such a tremendous job with, you know, being involved and picking up the offense and staying up to date with all of our weekly little tweaks that we might have within a game plan.
So a lot of confidence within the organization for Geno Smith, or at the very least, that's the messaging that we're getting this year from, or this week from, the Seahawks. Good. I'm rooting for Geno, and I hope he succeeds. it is tempting, and I've seen some of this online, and we've talked through some of this as well because of kind of what we're going to find out about the Seahawks offense without Russ in there. It is tempting to kind of logic yourself, if I could create a word, into believing that there's no win here long-term for the marriage of Russ and Pete. It is tempting to get there. If Geno plays well and the offense looks cleaner, then it looks bad for Russ, right? Why isn't he hitting the open man? Why is he waiting too long? Why? And then all of a sudden, Russ looks bad, and the marriage doesn't look as strong. If the offense does nothing without Russell Wilson, is Russ going to be mad and say, well, there's just not enough here. Look, there's not enough talent around. You're not running the right scheme. Nobody can succeed in this. And that ends up being a problem for the marriage of Pete and Russ. And so I may have some tendencies that will drive me towards some negativity or some pessimism.
No.
So I recognize that I have some of those tendencies. But, Justin, before you continue to scoff at me, I am learning in my old age to try to fight through some of those things and look on the bright side. And so I think it's actually fairly easy to get there. How could these three games, how do you get through it without hurting the long-term marriage of Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson? The easy answer, win a few games, have Russell come back and start, and then go on a run. That's the easy answer, right?
True.
I mean, you could get into the negative. The negative would be, well, they start running the ball here in order to make up for the fact that Russell's not there. And they're so successful with the run that they win a few games, and then Russell comes back, and then Pete wants to keep running because it's working for them. And then Russell says, I want out of here because I want to run the ball. That's the negative. That's how you win, and it still goes awry. But the real answer is that winning cures all. And if you're able to win two out of these three games, hopefully it's only three, and then Russ comes back and you're, you know, 500 team, and he takes you on a run, which he's certainly capable of doing, and you end up going deeper than you'd been in the postseason the last few years. Maybe you make the NFC Championship game, or even better, get all the way to LA this year. Well, don't you think that would be the best thing in the world for the long-term marriage of Pete and Russ?
Yeah, I don't own to jump to conclusions, Matt, and I'm not willing to look past 1 week at a time here. This is the first game we started without Russell in how many years? I'm not willing to be like, okay, well, what's the best case scenario for the next 5 to 6 weeks? Win Sunday, and then we'll talk about the next week.
Well, I appreciate that you've got the player's view of it, right? You just want to keep whatever, just one game at a time.
I can't look that far out.
Justin's going to just take it one game at a time, try to do whatever he can to help the team, right?
I'll play along. If you said, like, hopefully, maybe you could even make it to the NFC Championship game, where to me, if they don't make it to the championship game, Russ is in the same mindset as last year.
I think so, too.
He's not okay with just making the playoffs anymore.
It was a buy one, get one sale and a jump to conclusion, Matt, that I must have missed out on.
Well, Smikowski's been walking around helping, throwing out his mats to everybody who will take one.
Smikowski.
More, I kind of agree with you. And the where they're at right now, they don't even look like they're going to do that. I mean, making the playoffs right now has become a tall task. You're out. Your starting quarterback is out for at least 3 weeks and three games, rather, and maybe it's going to be longer than that. And you weren't playing particularly like a playoff team before then. So I don't know if that's jumping to too deep a conclusion. I appreciate your thought, Justin. And I love I love that you want to take it one game at a time, do whatever you can to help the team.
We have no choice.
And, right? Just play within yourself and play your role, and everything will kind of work out.
Do your job.
I love all of that. I think it's all very smart. But it all kind of makes me wonder, what if they come out chucking? Like, everybody thinks they're going to need to run the ball and Chris Carson need to come back and try to make it easier for Geno. What was the offense that Geno played in college, right? At West Virginia, where he had, what did you say, 600 yards passing in a game?
Yeah, it was like 656.
What if they just come out chucking? What if they just come out throwing it all over the yard, abandon the running game, four wide receivers, and just start chucking it?
Backyard football.
Yeah, if that's actually what makes Geno
the best. Would
that
make Russell jealous?
Maybe. Maybe. But what if it works and then Russ comes back and he's a... I don't know. Like, anything is possible with this game. I guess that's why I'm so fascinated with what they're going to do. Do they retreat to being a running team? I think that's the most likely. But maybe they don't. Maybe they decide they're just going to open it up and they think that everyone's expecting them to play super conservative and they just say, let's go. Caution to the wind.
It's not the easiest defense in the world. They're not the toughest either, but... You know, one thing we haven't talked about is that Geno still looked pretty good running last week.
He did. He looked better than he has the last few years. Maybe he and Russ are doing the same diet or something, the same workout campaign in the offseason. You know what they must be doing? Are those ropes, those big ropes that they show in every commercial?
Ropes.
What is that? Why does that have to be in every... Oh, people are working out. Show the ropes.
Flip a tire.
Show the ropes.
I don't like the idea of Geno out there running. That's like not having insurance on a rental car. I don't like that idea at all. Because what happens if Geno gets hurt running?
Well, but the thing is, I love that view, and that's common. How'd Russ get hurt?
In the pocket. I know.
How'd Tom Brady get hurt? In the pocket. How'd Peyton Manning get hurt? Pocket. I mean,
you could probably also list a 700 more examples of quarterbacks who were running and got hurt.
I'm sure you can. I think the point, though, is you can get hurt anywhere in a football field, and I think most injuries are freak. They're mostly freak things that happen.
Concussion.
Right in the pocket. Right? I mean, like, I don't know.
He needs to get moving.
I think these guys are actually able to take care of themselves better once they get out on the run sometimes. Like, they're in open space. They can see what's going on around them. They don't get blindsided the same way. People are less likely to fall on their knees in weird ways. So, I don't know. There's a lot of options. You guys can text the show, 206-421-3776. Any chance they open it up? We'll see. Last night was great. I don't know what the appetite is for, like, real hockey talk yet in Seattle, but if you were watching the game, hopefully you saw what I did, which was a much better effort from the Kraken than we had seen in Game 1. More physical, more in sync. Right, the passes went tape to tape. Do you know how many times in the first game the pass was behind the guy and he had to like reach back, and it just messed up the flow of the play, it messed up the momentum of that moment. That didn't happen yesterday. Tape to tape, clean passing, better effort, fewer giveaways, you name it. And then the lockdown defense in the third period, Grubauer, who had been good, I said good, not great, in the first game, I thought was very good to great last night. Especially in the third period, I thought he was excellent in that game.
I have a question.
Yeah.
That you hear on the broadcast, now I've heard it twice. They're really good in transition. Is that just something as soon as the offense and defense is swapped? Is that what that means?
Yeah, when all of a sudden you have the puck and now you're going the other direction.
That's all that's that simple.
Yep, you get your transition game going.
Okay, because I hear this is a really good goal-scoring team in transition.
Yes, meaning they capitalize on your mistakes. It's, hockey is... It would be like a basketball team that causes a lot of turnovers and scores in the fast break.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Perfect example,
yes. You're causing turnovers, and then in that transition, you're able to go D to O very quickly.
I didn't know if it was that or if it was like a line change. They're really good when this happens.
No, I would say transition. Your transition game is essentially like your fast break game.
Got it.
In basketball. There are decent comps between basketball, soccer, and other sports and hockey. As foreign as it may look seeing them out there on skates, I think there are some good comps. But what did you see last night? When they hustled, it worked. Their first two goals came directly as a result of them just working hard, of them just finding ways to either see. I mean, that new kid, I thought, played a really good game last night, Alex Barry-Barre. Picked him up off waivers because Tampa just had too many guys and needed to cut somebody. And so you end up picking him up. I thought he played pretty well in his first action. He forced a penalty, which was great. And then on that penalty, Brandon Tanev put the puck in the net.
Soucy for Donskoy. Side of the goal, Wenberg, a power move. They score! Brandon Tanev on the follow-up. It's another power play goal, Seattle.
So, yeah, when they worked hard, it ended up leading to good things for them. And then the last goal they got, not the shorty, but the third goal they scored was an absolute beauty.
Donskoy, inside track on Carey, Barré-Bourlé, in front, they score! That's hockey, baby! Alex Wenberg with the finish. What a pass by Alex Barré-Bourlé! And the Kraken recapture a one-goal lead.
Yeah, once again, it was just hard work in the offensive zone, keeping the puck deep. They cycled the puck so well last night. So that's another thing you can look for, Justin, as you're watching, is how they quote unquote cycle the puck.
Meaning, just passing?
Yeah, passing in the offensive zone, right, where you see them just kind of like just the guys kind of almost rotate in a circle. Who's in the corner? Who's in front of the net? Who's behind the net? They put the puck in deep. It goes back to the point. It goes back into the corner. It goes in deep. And you keep the puck in the offensive zone long enough that you can actually change bodies while the defense is stuck in there.
Okay.
And if you can do that, now you've got fresh bodies on the ice while those defenders are getting tireder and tireder, and that's when they get lazy or they grab, or they trip, or they hook, and the next thing you know, you've got a power play out of the hard work that you did cycling the puck in the offensive zone. Or they get tired, they start running around, they lose their defensive assignment, they lose their man, and you end up with Alex Wenberg all by himself next to the net. And that was the easiest goal that guy's ever going to score in his life.
It's going to take me a while to figure out the offsides and delayed offsides. Because you mentioned it to me yesterday. I was like, oh, when a delayed offside happens,
yeah,
that's when you can pull a goalie.
Well, that was delayed penalty.
Delayed different penalty, from a delayed not a delayed offside.
Offsides? Yes, there's both.
Oh, okay. So which is the one where they can pull the goalie?
That's a delayed penalty.
Delayed penalty.
Yes.
And then as soon as the puck changes possession,
yes,
play stops because, yes, it was a penalty and you can return to your goalie. So,
yeah, so
random empty nets,
yeah,
mean it's a delayed penalty.
Yes. So middle of the game, your team trips my team and you were going to go off the ice. But before you do, you've got to get control of the puck. My team has control of the puck. So I'm going to pull the goalie.
We don't stop play because
I'm
at a disadvantage.
That's right. You're now at a disadvantage, and I want to take it. You cannot do anything with the puck. As soon as you touch it, the puck is dead.
Okay.
So why don't I pull my goalie? Because you can't put the puck in my net. Now I can go 6-on-5 for as long as I can and give myself a longer power play, essentially.
And which is where if you're really good at cycling the puck, you
That's
can
right.
hold possession longer. Now you have one man up.
There okay. you go. Now okay. you get an opportunity. And unfortunately, the Kraken did have a good shot. The puck just jumped over someone's stick, and they ended up touching up. And the next thing you know, you got the power play. But I thought their power play looked good last night. They scored a couple of goals in the power play. Their defense was better. Grubauer was better. Like, you name it. That was the Kraken team that I think we're going to see more of this year. And good for them, man. They've put the puck in the net 7 times in 2 games. This team is supposed to have trouble scoring. I don't know if Nashville is a particularly great challenge, but good on them, man. They're finding ways to get the puck into the net, which is supposed to be the hardest thing for them. It was a pretty darn good effort for them last night. All right, 7:15. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, for an interconference matchup that you only get every couple of years, the Steelers sure have some frustrating history for the Seahawks and their fans. I don't need to remind anybody of 2005 and the Super Bowl. Obviously, you remember what happened, and you can't really blame the opponent for bad calls by the referees, but you know what? They were certainly the ones to benefit, so I get it. What about 2011, though? Do you remember that one? When the Steelers physically walloped them on their way to a 24-0 victory that dropped Seattle to 0-2. We think that's the last time Seattle's been shut out since 2011. I can't remember a Russell Wilson shutout. So it was after that game that John Schneider decided his team would never be physically dominated like that again. And for years, they were not. The mission now, though, to get back to that level of physical dominance that they displayed during their Super Bowl years, and with Russell Wilson out, it'd be a really good time to start doing that. Are we sure Russell's going to be out? I think so, right? He was listed as a partial participant in practice yesterday. I know there's no chance he plays, but also when I saw that, I was like, maybe he does play.
Could he take one snap?
We'll
continue
see.
The streak?
Carson and Metcalf did not practice either. Chris Carson, a little concerning, but mostly because Pete said that he would go yesterday, and then he did not. For Pittsburgh, no Juju Smith-Schuster as expected. Old Fran Akella Witherspoon missed practice with a coach's decision designation, which I don't remember seeing, so I don't know if he's suspended from the team or what. Be kind of curious what's going on there. Another full weekend in the NFL. Rams at New York on Sunday. They'll take on the Giants. New York just 1-4 on the year, so I don't know. We'll be rooting for them. Cardinals at Cleveland. They're trying to stay unbeaten, and Seattle will become big Baker Mayfield fans for the day as well. Niners have a bye, as do the Saints, who we will see next week against the Seahawks.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, another milestone last night. Kraken get their first win in franchise history, 4-3 in Nashville. Brandon Tanev leading the way with a pair of goals. That was a Kraken team we were expecting for sure. Tried to keep it positive, honestly, after the first game because, you know, it was more about just getting to know the team and the excitement of having a franchise, but I just didn't think they played very well. That changed last night in Nashville. They brought physicality, they brought speed, they cleaned up their defensive mistakes, they were active, and it all translated onto the goal sheet. Even the chemistry issues that plagued them in Vegas seemed to disappear. So cool. Love the hustle, and I loved how it led to results. To wit, Vince Dunn. 2 big hits early, ruffled a few feathers, led to a fight, led to a power play, and then you get the McCann goal. Newcomer Alex Barry-Boulet used his speed, forced a tripping penalty. That led to the second goal. Work hard, get rewarded, and that certainly was the case last night.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, instant classic in the baseball postseason last night. Dodgers advance to the NLCS. Cody Bellinger broke a 1-1 tie in the ninth inning with an RBI single. Max Scherzer came in to pick up the save. Giants wasted, it's too bad, an epic performance from Logan Webb. He went 7 innings, allowed just 1 run. He was dynamite. Unfortunately, too, the game ends on a bad call. Just a blown call. Wilmer Flores at the plate, 2 strikes, called out on a check swing that he very clearly was able to check. First base ump ruled that he had swung, and it is just not challengeable. So there you go. Red Sox and Astros set to start tonight in Houston. Chris Sale against Framber Valdez. And then Tom Brady kept the train rolling last night. Tampa holds off a late Philly run to improve to 5-1. 28-22 the final as Brady throws for 297 and a pair of scores. Jalen Hurts had 1 touchdown through the air, 2 more on the ground in a losing effort. And Richard Sherman's return to the NFL has hit a bit of a setback. He left the game last night with a hamstring injury and did not return. He is now expected to miss some time. Those are 3 things you need to know. Do that a quarter past every hour. It is a bummer that they make that call last night. I mean, it's just a bad call. And it just seems ridiculous with some of the things they can and probably shouldn't be able to challenge in baseball, that you can't challenge the check swing, which is so obvious when you get an opportunity to see it with a video review.
I've always said, if you're going to go in on a replay, go all in. Don't tiptoe into it and have just these weird little instances that, like you said, if you slide past a bag or your hand comes right off for a half a second, like, that's not in the spirit of the game.
It is not.
This is way more serious and hopefully something that they will get a fix. Assuming it won't be for another 5 years until this goes in.
Baseball tends to move a little slowly. We'll see what happens with the negotiations this offseason. The one that drives me crazy that they review, I get it if you slid past the bag and your hand comes off. That is something they should check. What I don't like is when you're sliding over the bag and there's a moment that you pop up over it. That
you
is
clearly
ridiculous.
Beat the throw.
Right.
Yeah.
You didn't slide past the bag.
No.
You just went over it and there's a moment that you hopped and there was a second or a millisecond when you're not touching it. That one just always seems wrong to me, man. That is not the spirit of how that replay is supposed to work.
Totally agree. Question for you about Russell. We know he's not going to play, right?
We think he's not going to play.
We think he's going to play. He practiced.
We mostly know he's not going to play.
I don't want to say he'd go in to get the 1 snap to hand it off, just extend the streak.
No, he would not do that.
As petty as Baltimore was with their 5-yard run at the end to extend that streak.
That would be wrong. That would be wrong, I think, for him to do that. I would look down on that. I would frown on that.
I totally agree. So, but do you think that means he will be sideline with a headset on? Do you think he'll be in a booth? Where do you think he actually would?
Well, in talking to who are we talking to? Matt Hasselbeck. He seemed to think that he would be on the sideline, that would be the logical place for him, that the only reason guys generally aren't there is because they have a leg injury, they're on crutches, and so it's a danger for them to be down there. I think Russ is going to be there helping to coach up Gino the whole time, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. But I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
That's the way Pete's made it sound.
Yeah. I mean, heck, he's out there in full uniform in practice the last couple of days.
I hope he's just wearing a helmet, like street clothes and a helmet on the sideline so he can still have it in his ear.
I had a dream about Russell Wilson, like, catching passes and trying to throw last night. So I don't know. Maybe it's just in my mind, but that's kind of what I've been thinking about. I don't know if he's... I guess he was throwing the ball left-handed, right?
Yep.
He was just trying to do it. Was that a dream, or did I actually see that on Twitter this
Bob
morning
Condotta
when I woke
that
up? Oh, okay. So I did see it.
Yes.
I got to tell you. That moment when I'm, like, trying to wake up between 4:15 and 4:30, it's a really iffy what's dream and what's reality. It's like 15 minutes of Inception.
You've never been in a sensory deprivation tank, have you?
No, thank you. No.
Oh, you really don't want to go into
it. No, okay. I don't. No, I'm all set.
That's once you get, I don't want to say good at it, but
no.
The more comfortable you get in a float tank, that's where you live. It's in that weird state between dream and awake and not sure what's real and not, and it is awesome.
I don't even like it when it happens to me in the morning. I'm not a fan. Yeah, so I did actually see Russell catching passes and trying to throw. That is real. That did happen.
It's fun, man. I think you should try it.
I feel like that scene in The Matrix where he shows him the little bug, where she pulls the bug out of his stomach. Oh my God, that thing's real. Like, that 15 minutes is, it's not going well. Yeah, I hope Russ doesn't come in for 1 snap. He won't do that.
No,
but that would be, I think that would be frowned upon. That is not the way streaks are supposed to be maintained. All right, coming up next, Seattle athletes 2-for-2 this week, but not in games. How Mitch Haniger's channeling his inner Richard Sherman in all the right ways. That's next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's like frenemy day here on the show. We got Brock coming up in 15 minutes. G at 8 o'clock. Stacey Rost on the show at 9. Kind of frenemy day.
I wonder where you're going with that. I thought those were friends, but okay.
No, mostly friends.
I don't want to know what you say about Maura and I now.
No, you guys are on the team, okay. Right? We're teammates.
Okay.
That's better than friends. That's better than frenemies. It's almost better than family.
You're saying all the right things.
I'm
like
trying.
Bobby and Coach and everybody.
I just think Justin comes in, prepares every day like he was going to be the starter, like he's going to be the host, and he kind of
you never know. He's never been here before.
You never know what's going to happen over there. Hey, did you guys read Mitch Haniger yesterday in the Players Tribune? I hope you did. It was awesome. And by the way, second great Seattle piece in the Players Tribune this week. I always forget to see that stuff there. Thankfully, it's on Twitter because I kind of miss it. And I know a lot of the other shows had a chance to talk about this yesterday. Maybe it came out during the show, maybe not. But I didn't see it until midday yesterday. I heard Jake and Stacey talking about it. So read Mitch Haniger's piece. I had read Chris Drieger's piece as well. They were both awesome. They are really worth your time. So Chris Drieger, backup goalie for the Kraken, he told his story of riding buses and, you know, the challenges he had. He had been drafted by Ottawa and it didn't go all that well. He was like fifth on the depth chart and he's riding buses in the ECHL, which is, you know, two steps away from being in the NHL. And he calls it the Coast League, the Coast, right? And he's like, you know, I'm never going to make it. And it just feels hopeless and his buses are breaking down. And then he ends up leaving Ottawa and signing with Florida. And he's like, man, this is even worse. At least when I was with Ottawa, I had been drafted there. And there's somebody who truly like wanted me. I was their guy. But then I went to Florida. Nobody cares about me. And in a weird way, it helped him. Not having the crutch of somebody who was like his guy, he knew that would take care of him. He needed to go prove it. And so, you know, he meets some of the right people. He ended up meeting Roberto Luongo's brother, who was the goalie coach there. And it helped him realize that I thought I was working hard, but I wasn't working hard enough. He realized what it was really like to work hard. And then he met Sergei Bobrovsky. And then one thing kind of leads to another. And now he's become a guy who made some money in the NHL, signed a real contract here with the Kraken. He was one of the people that they sought out. So it's a really great, great story of how to unstick your career. And I think that's something almost everybody can relate to. Almost everyone you know is either in a career, a job that they feel stuck in or used to be in is now in a career or a job that they like. Almost everybody you know, I would bet, has one of those two situations. Either they're currently feeling stuck in their job or they felt stuck in their job at one point, and they have now found a way to get out of that and get unstuck. And so for him, for Chris Drieger, it was working harder, right? It was learning that he hadn't been doing everything he really thought he needed to do in order to get to the next level. For Mitch Haniger, who was stuck at AA and not even playing, essentially riding the bench at AA a few years ago, he actually chose to go backwards, to take a step back, to take two or three steps forward. He made the unusual request, and this is in his Players Tribune story. You should go read it. He asked his organization, Arizona, to send him back to single A.
I didn't know you could even do that.
Well, I mean, you can ask. It doesn't mean they'll say yes.
I know, but I don't think they'd take it kindly. Like, really?
He went back and he said, hey, it was a risk of career suicide. Hey, I need to play. I'd rather play at single A than ride the bench here. Send me back. And he went back to single A. They granted the request, and he started raking, and they just kept, you know, advancing him and advancing him until eventually he made it to the big leagues. So while the story, I think, is probably more about the injury he suffered and how awful it was to come back between the ruptured testicle and the back issues and the groin issues, I mean, it's like these three things all in the core of his body just abandoned him over the course of two full years that he missed. I was really struck by that moment of I'm not happy. I'm not succeeding. And if I want to succeed, I've got to take matters into my own hands. It's not just nobody's going to do it for me. And that was the common messaging, I thought, between both Mitch Haniger and Chris Drieger. No one's going to do it for you. Even a guardian angel, which Drieger had in Ottawa, his guardian angel wasn't going to do it for him. Mitch Haniger had been drafted in Arizona. Yeah, but your guardian angel's not just going to take care of you. You got to go do it yourself. You've got to take an active role in your life and your career and in how it's going to turn out for you.
And almost every single great sports success story has this.
Totally true. Of when that moment you realize I'm not working as hard as I need to. I'm good enough to be there. I have the talent just like all these other guys do. But if I work harder, then I can actually tap into all of that talent. So really great stories. Read them both. Here's the second takeaway. And I know a lot of people read the Mitch Haniger story and they focused on this line. He wrote, I hope our front office is reading this and they understand that it's time to really go all in. It's time to make some impact moves and put this group over the top. Yeah, I know a lot of people read that and said, yep, here we go again. More angry Seattle players because the front office isn't going to spend money and John Stanton's the worst and this, that, and the other. And that I did not read that at all. I think you have to read it in context and not just hear that one line. Because the line before it, I thought was actually better. By the way, John Stanton, he specifically calls out for being a part of his rehab and how supportive John Stanton and the organization was to him as he was going through his 2 years of rehab. But here's the line that stood out. It's the one right before the one about the front office. He says, I hope the other teams in the league are all reading this. And they understand that we're about to get after it in the offseason. And then we're coming for one of those playoff spots and more.
Man, talk about putting a target on your back and theirs.
That sounds like the post-2012 Seahawks. That sounds like Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and Marshawn, everybody, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, everybody who was a part of that team then who were like, okay, let's go. All right, you know what? You guys are on notice. We've got something here. We started it this year, but we weren't good enough yet to finish it. We're coming for you next year. And they had the confidence. We'll talk to G here in 25 minutes or so at 8 o'clock. G was around those guys. He'll tell you. He knew for a fact that offseason that they were going to come back and dominate. Never been around a group of people more focused because they believed they were on the cusp. It's one thing to turn culture around. It's another to, when you're on the cusp, be like, guys, every moment you're not working out could come back to bite us later.
Yep.
When you're planning to win 60, 70 games, hey, if we work out 10 more minutes today, maybe you'll win 62 games.
We'll be 27 games behind first place and like not 29.
It just doesn't have that same level of impact. But if you're right on the verge and you know it, and you know that every ounce of extra effort you put in could end up leading to the next, to the next level, don't you want to be even more? Doesn't that give you the taste to go over the top with your prep for the next season? I would hope so.
We heard that repeatedly from the guys this year, and Shannon said it as well. They, when they were asked kind of what was different, they said that everybody's putting in the same level of effort. No one is slacking.
Early work, right? How does team chemistry affect baseball? How does team chemistry affect wins? Early work. Hey, I'm having fun here. I'm going to come in early to the ballpark and take some extra defense. Rather than, I'm going to stay home and sleep because I don't want to be around these guys. I don't know whether that like takes a 60-win team and has them win 90 games. I don't think it can create that big a difference, but you are not 35 games away from the promised land. You're like 5-7.
It's insane.
You win another 5-7 games, you win your division, who knows what happens?
I used to have a coach tell me, if you don't want to work hard, don't worry. There's somebody else out there who will and does.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
it's like, don't worry. Just go ahead. Just leave. Somebody else is going to.
And by the way, we work in a profession where that's true. I know not everybody out there does, but it's not like they're just giving away jobs in the radio business. I mean, there's very few people. We feel incredibly fortunate to be in the jobs that we're in because there aren't that many of them. Right. So you got to it's challenging. Baseball's the same way. Hockey's the same way. There's only so many guys who get to that level and they have to fight like you know what to make sure they maintain it. So I was really struck by it. I was struck by Haniger and Drieger and their ability to cut through, but I was really struck by, oh man, this Mariner team believes the same way Richard Sherman did in 2012.
Well, and how about fiery Mitch? Like, he's usually the quiet one.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's just a writer. He's a writer more than he is a talker.
That could be.
He just could be. And I loved how team-oriented it was. It didn't even mention his big moment Saturday night in the second-to-last game of the season. It mentioned the team and the fight that they all had together and how much fun they had. It's great. I 100% recommend it.
Yeah,
and hopefully it means Mitch is more interested in sticking around here.
And for every person who's like, same old Mariners, go read that and tell me you think the same thing.
Yeah, you could not come away with that view. No way, no how. Brock's next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Ewart is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Ewart says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Good morning, buddy. How we doing?
I'm doing good, Salk. Doing good. I got out of bed for you.
Oh, that was nice of you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was laying in bed. I was like, can I really do this from bed?
No.
I'm out here in Indiana. Got in really late. Molly had some oral surgery yesterday, so I pushed my flight back. Got in here real late and just was watching tape in bed this morning. We have meetings this afternoon. And I was like, do you think Salk would notice if I do this in bed? And
yeah.
I think you would.
I think I would. I think I'm clued in enough to your verbal cues that I would have sensed that you were still in bed.
Oh, funny you say verbal cues. Interesting you should say that.
Why?
Was it yesterday or Wednesday when we were on, when we do this every morning?
Yeah.
You said a word verbally. Maura, go ahead and play it like this.
Hold on. She's getting it. What did I say?
The guy with, honestly, the most important job in the entire Kraken organization. We'll talk to him next.
Yeah, I said it like the way hockey players say it. I did it on purpose.
Are we doing this? Are we gonna? Is this gonna be part of it for everybody in the culture?
The organization?
Have to say, yes,
absolutely.
Is this the culture of 710 ESPN Seattle? Is this the culture of our podcast? Is this the culture that we are? I just want to know it from like day two now, I guess, after the first win.
Yeah.
Is this what we're going to all lay down on everybody? Are we going to throw the hammer down and ask everybody in the Seattle area in Washington
right. To
call our Seattle Kraken a wonderful organization?
I think if you get the opportunity to, you should. Yes. Didn't you hear
okay,
him?
Good.
Did
okay.
you hear Hackstall all right. after the game? The other big one is just the way you pronounce boys, B-O-Y-C-E. Did you hear any of Hackstall after? Here's a second of Hackstall.
And then you come into tonight, boys.
You go out there, play hard, boys. It's unique, man. You got to pronounce things the right way. It's great.
Okay, good. All right. I just want to get everybody on the same page.
Good.
The first week, you know.
Right.
You got to build that foundation.
I appreciate
the right
that.
Way in the organization.
Yes.
So,
all right. I want to get to Seahawks in a moment. I got to ask you a quick Husky question first. After watching last night's game, just seeing him over the last couple of years in the NFL, is it possible that the entire Husky playoff run to the Peach Bowl and all that was just Vita Vea?
He's a bad man. Yeah, he's a bad man. I was just looking at a picture, actually. I think the Huskies tweeted it out, or the Husky Twitter tweeted it out from the Dolphins-Buccaneers game last weekend. Do you remember all the dudes on that team? That's Miles Gaskin.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I would give Miles a ton of credit as a multiple 1,000-yard rusher after 1,000-yard rusher after 1,000-yard rusher. I think we see how difficult it's been to replace Marshawn Lynch. It's been pretty hard to replace him. There's Vita Vea. There is even the backup running back, I'm blanking on his name, behind Miles Gaskin, who's on the Dolphins as well. There's Joe Tryon, first-round pick of the Buccaneers. I mean, first-round pick, two running backs, a little receiver that played, kind of predated even some of this. But, yeah, multiple dudes. And Vita Vea is a huge piece of it, Mike.
Yeah.
There's just simply no question about it. Yes, in a long, convoluted answer. Was Vita Vea an enormous foundational piece for Jimmy Lake, the 5 years that he was there to build his defense around? Unquestionably, yes.
Was he also
the crazy thing about him? You know the crazy thing about him, too?
What?
We're talking to another Pac-12 coach about this. He said how he got into school there and how that happened is still befuddling to many of us because he was a high school running back. He was like low recruited, didn't know if he could get into school. Ultimately ended up getting into school and then turned into, yes, one of the craziest creatures they've ever had in the
football
world.
Well, and one of the all-time great interviews. Vita, what's your favorite thing to do on a football field?
I guess just playing.
There you go, just playing, man. Gino is going to be out in the football field just playing on Sunday, Brock. What can Gino realistically do this weekend?
He could throw for 300 yards and move the ball up and down the field.
That's realistic?
it could be. I think depending, you know, some of this is dependent upon Pittsburgh as well. Some of this is dependent upon Watt. He's back. He's had a groin issue. The linebacker Bell, he's had a groin. Looks like he's going to be back. I mean, some of it is dependent upon them and just how healthy they are. That's a 2-3 football team as well. I mean, that's not the 5-0 Pittsburgh Steelers. That's not the Steelers of 10 years ago. Seattle went in there and beat them, 2 years ago when Big Ben's arm fell off?
Yeah.
So, you know, they have an opportunity, I think, to block those guys up a little bit and Tyler and DK to run around. And it would not shock me at all if on Monday, Geno Smith throws for 300 yards. Now, do they lose 33-20? You know, does he get a bunch of yards in the second half because they're down 16-3 and a half? Very possible, but wouldn't surprise me if he puts up a bunch of production this weekend.
You think it's possible they decide instead of running the ball and trying to play conservative, that they just start winging it all over the field right from the beginning?
It's possible. It's possible, and I think that has to do with Chris Carson's neck. He didn't practice yesterday. That's a bad sign. That's been a problematic deal now for the last few weeks because, you know, Alex Collins can catch it, man. He's great in the screen game and Homer and DJ Dallas and those guys as well. And just say, yeah, I think that in some ways from just a psyche standpoint as well, Salk tells everybody like, hey man, we're not going to crawl into a hole. We don't have Russell. We're not going to fall into a bunker and quit. In fact, we got a guy that's played, you know, he's been around the league a long time, and he came in last week in a pretty tough environment at the 2-yard line and drove us 98 yards by pushing the ball down the field and being aggressive. So that also, I think, could play a little bit psychologically. And, yeah, the more I talk myself into it, come Monday, be ready to play this sound back, like the organization.
Yeah.
be ready to play this back because I think Geno could throw for 300 yards Sunday.
It's certainly possible. There's no chance Russell plays, right?
No.
Like, you're 100% sure he was limited in practice yesterday. You're 100% sure he's not going to play?
You know exactly what that was.
I do,
was,
but I still.
I'm not going to sit in a parka. I can't possibly sit in a jacket and off to the side. Russell Wilson is not built in any way to
but then why isn't he on IR? Like, why don't they want the roster spot? Why wouldn't he be on IR?
Well, that's a good question. And we'll see whether or not after this week that gets determined to be that way. No.
But IR is just 3 weeks, Brock. He's got to miss 3 weeks, right? Otherwise, you put him on IR, and why would he be partially participating in practice? Watch Russ go out there and start on Sunday. How funny would that be?
And they're going to fly Cam Newton in, too. It's going to be Russ and Cam Newton.
Unbelievable. What an incredible day. All right, last thing. Seahawks win this weekend, Brock. They pull it off if what?
If they take the ball away 3 or 4 times, like if their defense actually Bobby and Jamal and they turn on the aggressive meter, you talked about them offensively, you know, hey, is it possible they'll be aggressive? Well, what about defensively? Mm. Are you going to be just a sitting target for Ben Roethlisberger, the aged Roethlisberger, the immovable Ben Roethlisberger to just sit back there and pick you apart and then run at you? Or are you going to force the issue? It's going to be sack fumble. Is it going to be interception? Is it just going to be sacks, a negative play? So maybe, Mike, even beyond takeaways, because that's hard against a veteran quarterback, how about just negative plays? They win if they create multiple negative plays every quarter defensively. How about that?
Would certainly work for me. You know what you need, Brock.
Hey, Brock, sack fumble.
We'll sack fumble in there and make the whole thing work. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you on Monday. Enjoy.
Sounds good. See you, bud.
All right, there you go. Brock just trying to help the organization do whatever he can to help the team win. Got to love it, boys. Good stuff.
Appreciate that.
All right, G, I don't know if G knows what we're talking about, but he's been watching hockey. I got to get G's point of view on that, plus a whole lot more coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's Mike Salk Show.